Okay, I think we're ready to go with our second case, 20-2124, Thornton versus Tyson Food. And for Thornton would be Mr. Dunn.
Good morning, Your Honors. Blair Dunn, on behalf of...
If I may, Judge Timkovich, just an initial matter, I note that one of the parties here is named Michael Lucero. I have no knowledge who Mr. Michael Lucero may be, but the last names match. So if you know of any reason I should be recusing because of this coincidence, I'd appreciate it if both counsel would let me know, please. I know of none.
I know of none, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Your Honor, may I proceed again?
Oh, yeah. No, yes, please. I just wanted to make that preliminary comment.
All right. Good morning again, Your Honors. Blair Dunn on behalf of the appellants. May it please the court,
I don't want to be deciding a case against a first cousin or anything like that.
I understand that entirely, Your Honor. Being from New Mexico, we totally get that.
So, all right.
Your Honors, I'd like to begin this morning by first briefly giving a background and explaining a little bit of why this case is important to all consumers and to producers here in the United States, and then quickly turn to a discussion about how this court should view this case in light of the express language and the statutes, and then turn, of course, to some of the application from the United States Supreme Court of what I think is precedent that should have guided the district court to a different conclusion in this case. So
could you start with the preemption issue? Because it seems to me the thrust of your claims is that there's a problem with the label, and the only way that problem can be cured is either for Tyson not to use the label at all or to add additional language to the label so that, in your view, it would no longer be false. Is that the crux of your argument?
That's the crux of both of our arguments, Your Honor.
And then if the preemption cases say any requirement that requires additional language to the label, isn't that covered by the Meat Inspection Act?
No, Your Honor.
Why isn't there total preemption here, given the fact that you want to add language to the label?
Because, Your Honor, it's not correct to just say that we just want to add language to the label. That was certainly one of the requirements, or one of the relief, rather, that was sought. I understand where the district court very clearly could put that out of bounds as preempted to make the defendants here add something to a label. But that's different than the state's concurrent jurisdiction and ultimately what's in the act itself and the congressional statement of findings that give rise to this act. In other words, the intent, which is, we understand from the Supreme Court multiple times now, congressional intent is, of course, the touchstone of any preemption analysis. And that's why I was speaking to begin with of looking at the statutes themselves. Specifically, that, as I mentioned, Section 602, Congress says very clearly, it is essential in the public interest the health and welfare of consumers be protected by assuring that meat and meat food products distributed to them are wholesome, not adulterated, and properly marked, labeled, and packaged. This is important right now, given in current past weeks, there's an example of BSE, commonly known as mad cow disease, in Brazil. A couple instances of that. The way that this plays out is that because of a guidance document, not a rule promulgated by the agency, not something more formal like that, but a guidance document, that beef, not a live animal, could be shipped into the United States from Brazil, and then it would be offered to the consumers with a sticker on it that says product of the United States. And that's the difference. It's not that this is some sort of requirement. This is a permissive thing, and there isn't any sort of idea that this is preempted by the congressional intent. That congressional intent says the opposite of that. So you can't have a guidance document that, of course, yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, I'm trying to get you, I would like to have you explain what your objection is to the fact that this is a guidance document that very specifically approves this particular label. How does that impact the preemption analysis? I don't think you've pointed to any case law to support your argument. It seems to me you're just disagreeing with the guidance, not so much that it preempts.
Well, essentially, Your Honor, what we're arguing is that the guidance preempts congressional intent and the plain language of Section 678.
Well, Congress is who gave the Food Inspection Service the authority to make those kind of decisions about whether products are appropriately labeled or branded. So they gave the Inspection Service that authority. The Inspection Service takes that authority, issues their guidance, explains the guidance, applies the guidance. How is that not preempted then? I guess I'm just not seeing your argument about why it makes a difference that this is guidance when it's authorized by Congress.
Well, Congress's authorization has limits, Your Honor. I think that's the point.
Surely Congress didn't give authority or intend authority to deceive. You can't take a slab of meat off a ship from China, clearly from beef clearly raised in China, and slap a sign on it that says product of the United States. That seems disingenuous, dishonest. Surely Congress couldn't have intended that, could it?
That's precisely our argument, Your Honor.
Let me ask you this. Are there any cases out there that are parallel to this case where we are asked to state that the statute in question is an express preemption, yet it contains language that says that any state or territory or the district, very expressly, it includes territory, states, the district, are given concurrent jurisdiction. That, to me, strikes in the heart of an argument that this is express preemption. It's concurrent.
I agree. The plain language of the statute itself says, and the purpose is to stop unwholesome, adulterated, mislabeled products from entering the commerce. So Congress says, as long as what they're doing doesn't reach this limitation of being mislabeled, that yes, there is some preemption. But that gets to the point that I'm getting to, which is that what we're not asking is that the label be changed. What we're asking is that they not be allowed to lie on the label. And to your point, congressional intent clearly says that there is concurrent jurisdictions for the state. That means our consumer protection law should kick in to stop this deceptively. And Congress also in 602 mentions deceptive labeling, to stop this deceptive labeling of beef. That is precisely what we're arguing.
What relief are you asking of us? Are you asking us to declare that they cannot use a label that says product of the United States if in fact the underlying substantive product is not in fact raised in the United States? So you're saying don't use that label. You're not asking, as in response to Judge Moritz's question, you're not asking that anything be added to the label. You're asking that a label not be used in a misleading manner.
Precisely, Your Honor. Now, to be fair to the district court in this, in our requested relief, we do ask for honesty in labeling and that they be required to tell the truth about where it's coming from. But I think that we do, I'll concede that we do fall into preemption when we're asking that something else be added to the label. So for instance, if it's a piece of beef from Brazil, then it say product of Brazil and product of the United States, that would be different. That would be the change that came about from the COOL law, the country of origin labeling under the Ag Marketing Act. When Congress changed that in 2015, they did take beef and pork out. So we can no longer require that. So I do believe that the district court was correct in that point, that the relief we requested was not one that was available to require something on the package. But certainly the Supreme Court in the Scipione case has pointed out that there's still a duty not to deceive the consumers, that you have to communicate honestly. This is, of course, the light cigarettes case arguments from Mumford here in this district, from Judge Vasquez. So that's really what we're talking about, is that it's this duty not to deceive, that we're asking that the district court should have prohibited them from placing a false label, a knowingly false label on beef not from this country. That's the affirmative relief we also sought, was to prevent that from happening. That's what this case is really about, is the idea that the American consumer and the American producers competing in that same market should be entitled under the state's concurrent jurisdiction to enforce consumer protection laws to stop deceptive labeling. That's what this case is about.
And then how problem you've got is it's been a, I'm sorry, go ahead, Chief.
I was wondering how you fix the label here then.
Under the repeal of COOL, under the Ag Marketing Act, there's no longer a requirement for beef and pork that there be any statement of origin. We would say that if it's not an accurate statement of origin, that they not be allowed to place it on the label. So nothing needs to be on the label under the current state of the actual law when it comes to country of origin labeling.
Well, would it include a statement that says USDA approved or inspected?
It would, and that would still be proper under the statute. But it shouldn't be giving the consumers some sort of product of or some sort of feeling that they're actually getting something that's from this country when it's not.
Right. Judge, does it matter that here the live cows are imported, then they're processed in the United States? Why isn't the label technically accurate?
Your Honor, so if live cows, there's two different scenarios. One is where live cattle are fed here in the United States for a period of time. That may change the look at this. But certainly they're not cattle that are born in this country. They didn't originate at some point from this country. But we have a situation where we have floating feedlots that come across the ocean with under really no regulation whatsoever. They offload cattle. The cattle stand on American soil for minutes, maybe hours, and then they're slaughtered. And then they're still receiving that same label, even though they really didn't breathe much of the air here or eat any of the feed here in this country. They're really originating. That's the
deception. I get that, but they were slaughtered and processed here. Why doesn't that make them technically a product of the United States?
Well, Your Honor, the way that would properly be labeled, if we still had that, what it would say product of the United States and product of Brazil, for instance, or Australia or wherever else it comes from. That's the way COOL worked. We got rid of
COOL. That's exactly the opposite of what the agency said. It said it took that very label, and in authorizing it, it says that product of the United States does not mean that the product is derived only from animals that were born, raised, slaughtered, and prepared in the United States. It simply means that the product has been processed, slaughtered, and processed in the United States. Whether I agree with them or we agree with them, and I'm not sure I would, isn't really important, is it? It's whether, I mean, the agency has said that, the agency has that definition. Apparently that's going to be challenged again, but does it matter whether this court agrees or disagrees with the agency's definition of product of the United States?
Your Honor, this gets to your earlier question about why I take issue with the fact it's a guidance document. We don't even have a regulation attempting to override congressional intent here. This is merely just a guidance document. It doesn't go through the formal process of a rule. And yet here it is overriding the very clearly stated multiple times definition of or statement of intent from Congress and the findings of why this law exists. So I don't see how you can elevate our argument is that you really can't elevate a guidance document over the clearly and stated intent of Congress for purposes of conducting a preemption analysis when there's also a provision in the very preemption statute that says that in instances where this is happening, we're going to grant to the state's concurrent jurisdiction. If it's okay with
yes, just one question on the facts very quickly, because I know you're running out of time. Were these live animals that were imported into the United States, or is this are these slabs carcasses?
It's both, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And if the court has no further questions right now, I'd like to reserve the last minute and a half.
Thank you. Let's hear from Mr. Benward. You're on mute, Mr. Benward.
You're on mute, sir. Sir?
You're on mute.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. My tech person had to push pound for me. Sorry about the mix-up. But good morning, Your Honors. And may it please the court. It's undisputed that the labels plaintiffs are challenging were approved by USDA. They argue that they can sue
Counsel, could Congress conceivably have intended its language to be read in a way or applied in a way that allows outright deception to consumers on the branding of products? As an example I gave before, Congress couldn't have intended that a carcass of beef, a slab of beef, could be taken off a ship from China and marked product of the United States simply because they put a little bit of plastic and a little bit of Saran wrap over the product. Correct?
Your Honor, I agree that Congress did not justify and would not want deception. I disagree somewhat with your characterization of what's happening here, because as we go through in our brief, what USDA did here directly follows from what Congress did after the United States got sanctioned $1 billion in trade sanctions.
That country of origin legislation is not involved here, correct?
That's not true at all, Your Honor. Well, let me back up and say this. What Congress did in the Federal Meat Inspection Act is it did two things. It said we're going to have national standards and USDA is going to be the standard setter. Those are the two things it did. And so as a result of that, when private companies follow what USDA says and use approved labels, they can't be sued for damages. Now, plaintiffs, and Your Honor is advancing an argument for why USDA may have gotten the standard wrong here. That's plaintiff's view. And they're free to have that view, and they can urge it to USDA, as Judge Moritz alluded to. There's a rulemaking procedure going on right now over the meaning of product of the USDA, and they got 2,500 comments, more than 2,500. They said, we're not going to revise our labeling book. We're going to do rulemaking. So they can advance the argument there. They could even sue USDA and make the arguments that that Your Honor is advancing, that counsel is arguing and saying, this is arbitrary and capricious, it's wrong. They can do that, but
Are you arguing that the USDA is an indispensable party and that the USDA should have been joined in the state court proceedings?
No, it's not that they're an indispensable party, Your Honor. Here's the bottom line. As long as private companies are using labels approved by USDA, while the approval is still in force, they can't be sued under state law. The way to go about changing the standards is not through state law, and you can't hold a private company liable in damages for doing what USDA approved while the approval stands. That's the principle that controls here.
Hold it, not so quick. What do you make of this language? But any state, territory, et cetera, shall have concurrent jurisdiction for purposes to determine whether they are misbranded. Well, what do you make of that language? You want us, under federalism standards, to throw out that language, to say it means nothing and that the federal provision trumps. I don't read it that way.
Yeah, Your Honor.
Typically, in preemption cases, and over my career, I've had a lot of experience with them. You have language that in which the federal government either preempts the field, you have field preemption, or you have a product preemption, or you have some type of qualified preemption. This is not. This language says it's concurrent jurisdiction. You want us to ignore that portion of the statute and concentrate purely on the federal.
Your Honor, where you're wrong is the scope of the concurrent jurisdiction. States have concurrent jurisdiction to enforce the federal standards, but they do not.
Just a second. Where do you find that language about enforcement? I don't see it in here.
Yeah, it says that they have concurrent jurisdiction for the purpose of preventing the distribution for human purposes of any such articles which are adulterated or misbranded.
Right.
Now,
and I'm talking about misbranded.
Yep, and then the previous part of the sentence says that the same sentence.
One second, let me just ask a few questions, just to get my
go ahead, Your Honor.
And then let you proceed with your argument.
Yeah, go ahead.
Where does this statute say that a cow from Bangladesh can be branded as a product of the United States? Where do you read that?
It's not in here, Your Honor.
It's not there.
It's not in there. Of course it's not there.
So what's to keep a state court from ruling that a product branded in that matter is misbranded?
They can't do it under state law, Your Honor. That's the first part of the sentence. The states can't impose any requirements different from or in addition to the federal requirements. What the United States Supreme
Court... So this boils down to your view that Congress surely did intend that a cow from Bangladesh can be declared to be simply ipso facto a product of the United States.
No, but this comes down... No, Your Honor, and I understand your argument, but what my position comes down to is that Congress decided there would be national standards and that USDA would set them, and that the way to challenge those is to go through USDA, not to sue under state law private parties. That's the argument. And the United States Supreme Court in the Harris case applied this provision, and it said there doesn't have to be a conflict between federal law and state law, and this goes to the question earlier. They're just if it's in addition to or different from, USDA has said that product of the USDA can be used, or product of the USDA can be used whenever the meat is processed in the United States. Plaintiffs argue under state law that it can only be used if more than that happens in the United States. That's a requirement in addition to or different from the federal requirement, therefore it's preempted. Now, as I said, Your Honor, there are ways to challenge USDA's argument, but you got to go through USDA. Congress chose for there to be a national standard and for there to be a regulatory approach, not a jury-based approach.
What do you make of these contemporaneous parallel statutes that provide for assembled in the United States, manufactured in the United States from products imported from X? I mean, there are all kinds of statutes that talk about branding in different contexts. None of them allow you to somehow deceive the public as to where the product is from.
Your Honor, I confess I'm not familiar with those other statutes. None of the parties have cited them, so I can't address them. I can say, you know, that the closest analog to this case, you know, with factually that we've seen there, is the National Broiler Council case that we cite from the Ninth Circuit that dealt with the regulation of when you could call chicken or poultry fresh and not frozen. And the regulations have called it to be fresh, even if it was frozen, as long as it wasn't frozen below 0 degrees. And they had the same kind of discussion in the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit said, well, I'm sorry, the state law claims are preempted as to the labels because USDA is the decision maker. And basically said the same thing Your Honor did, you know, go and challenge the USDA. But you can't have a uniform national system if companies can be sued in damages for following the regulations while the regulations are still in place.
Well, if Congress intended that there be a uniform system and that the federal government kicked all the states out of the process, why on earth did they place this language in the statute that says that they are that the states, and very expressly the states and the territories and the district, shall have concurrent jurisdiction for misbranding? Now, what are we supposed to do with that? Like, we just throw it out?
Yeah. No, Your Honor, as I said,
as the judge said to me once when I was practicing, what do you want me to do? Sit on that and keep it warm? The language is there.
That's a good phrase too, Your Honor. But you know, the reason it's there is there isn't any private right of action to enforce the Federal Meat Inspection Act. And what Congress did by giving states concurrent jurisdiction is it allowed private causes of action to give remedies for violations of the federal standards. It did not give them authority to change the federal standards or to litigate over what the standards should be in a state law lawsuit. That's the distinction. And Your Honor, the Supreme Court in the Harris case said this. The very recent case that we cited as supplemental authority, the Webb versus Trader Joe's case, said this. And literally every case that has applied the FMIA or the Parallel Poultry Act that has the same language and that has addressed this issue has said exactly that, which is that states can add remedies. They can enforce the federal standards. They can't change them. And it's unmistakable that in this case, the plaintiff wants to change the standards. He's arguing about why the standards should be changed. And Your Honor is making the same arguments. Oh, go ahead, Your Honor.
Let me ask a question, if I could, about Bates versus Dow AgriScience. And one of the arguments in that case was that the plaintiff's invocation of state law would, if they won, would induce the company to change its labels or add language to it. And the court, in the majority opinion, rejected this inducement argument and allowed, as I understand it, certain claims to go forward for breach of express warranty, maybe unfair practice. And why isn't that the case here? That not so much the it's going to take a jury decision that might induce ICES to change the label. Why wouldn't that be contrary to the case?
Yeah. Your Honor, in the Bates case, the court did two things. The first thing it said is that the state unfair practices or deceptive practices claims could go forward if they were identical to federal law. It didn't decide whether they're identical because that wasn't fully fleshed out. And so it remanded and basically did what I'm saying here is that if you end up being identical, you can be enforced. Here, of course, what plaintiffs are doing is not identical. That's the whole point is that they're disagreeing. So it can't be identical. They said as to the warranty claims there that if all you were doing is enforcing some separate agreement in a contract, why that isn't creating a new or different requirement. But once again, here, this is dealing with a term that USDA precisely defined. And what plaintiffs are saying is that by using that term, you're agreeing to do something else and you have to do something else in order to use it. That is imposing a requirement in addition to or different from federal law, and that's why that's required. And this is why, Your Honor, to go back to when the U.S. Supreme Court has interpreted this act, the Federal Meat Inspection Act, it said you don't have to show a conflict. All you have to show is that it's in addition to or different from, and that's the language of this statute, and that's what the Ninth Circuit recently did too. So that's why, Bates was a FIFRA case, Your Honor, and that's how that came out. It was sort of an intermediate result on that. Your Honor, we haven't addressed the advertising. I just want to briefly say that we think the right approach on that is to affirm simply because plaintiffs didn't plead that our clients ran any ads. And so there's no reason to reach the preemption issue on that. I think plaintiff's counsel agrees now that they aren't trying to challenge ads run by my clients, by the Packers in this case. They pleaded, I think, that only retailers ran those. And one of plaintiff's clients has sued the retailers in a different suit. So, they can make that clear on there, but I think it's sufficient on the ads point just to say that there aren't any in play. And so that's where it is. On the preemption ground, Your Honor, I think you've heard why we do this. I wanna address briefly though, the informal point. I agree with Judge Morris that doesn't matter, but actually it's more formal than plaintiff's counsel made out because the formal regulations are at 9 CFR section 412.1 and section 412.2. And both of those regulations expressly reference and incorporate the policy book. And so it's not as if the policy book is floating out there on its own. When they amend the policy book, they also put notices in the Federal Register on that. And so the inspection service is directly implementing the authority that Congress gave it. It's implementing it correctly through regulations. And like I said, you can challenge those regulations. You got to do it with USDA, though. As long as the approval's in place, private companies can't be sued for filing under damages because that would completely disrupt the national uniform scheme that Congress intended here. If Your Honors have further questions, I'd be glad to answer them. Otherwise, we would request that you affirm the judgment.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Any answer, rebuttal?
Thank you. May it please the court. The first thing I'd like to begin with is a quick discussion. Counsel has repeatedly referred to this as a requirement different and additional to. That would mean different and additional to another requirement, but there is no requirement under this, under the guidance document, under the regulation adopting the guidance document, under the statute. There is no requirement under the FMIA that product of the United States or country of origin labeling be placed on this beef. It's not a requirement. And by muddling that requirement language, that's how we've arrived at where we are. And I want to turn quickly to the issue of federalism. I think that's at play here. I think Judge Lucero has definitely touched on this. But I would like to emphasize, and using as an example, mad cow disease from Brazil, product is imported, a slab of beef, as your honors described it. It's cut into smaller pieces. It's got a sticker slapped on it prior to the United States. That product is shipped to New Mexico. What remedy does the state have? And this is important for preemption analysis. What remedy under federal law do they have to stop that? The argument is that we could address this through some sort of rulemaking. That doesn't allow for the police power to protect the public.
Aren't there safety inspections for the meats that would identify adulterated or diseased cattle or even slaughtered cattle?
Without getting too much into the sausage making of meat processing, Your Honor, no, not always. That's the point. That's why the states still need to have this police power to be able to protect the health and safety of the public to enforce Congress's intent in the law. This is consistent with what Congress said, was that we don't want unwholesome, adulterated, mislabeled products reaching the public. And then we give the states concurrent jurisdiction to enforce to make sure that that doesn't happen. And what
can't you sue the, I think you could sue Tyson's under state law if the product was tainted that was delivered to New Mexico.
Tainted.
Therefore, if they're selling a diseased product in New Mexico, there's nothing about the labeling that would prevent, that would preempt a lawsuit going forward for, you know, for liability.
Except that you're hamstringing the state to make sure that the consumers are aware of where those products are coming from, so they can help self-help themselves avoid buying a product of Brazil that's improperly and deceptively labeled as a product of the United States. It's foisting that risk onto the consumers. And that's clearly opposite of what Congress intended. If the court has any other further questions.
I just want one last question. Have your clients advocated in front of the service that the labeling is misleading and should be changed?
As a consumer, Ms. Thornton has not. As a rancher, Mr. Lucero has advocated for that, yes.
Okay. Right, thank you. All right, counsel, we appreciate the arguments. Case shall be submitted. Counsel, you are excused.